J6. The Science of Being. The Emergence of a Divine Philosophy. Number 1A.
All right, so we begin, and what we would like to do is I'd like to just formally talk about the platform from which we speak, especially with an introductory class or an introductory conference. I always feel, though, now we get to have known each other, perhaps this is the way you get to know the Kapler Institute and those of us who are at summer schools and represent it, so to speak, as teachers, that the big main point is that what we're doing here is totally independent of any church organization and really independent of any organization at all. I don't belong to the Institute insofar as the Institute does not hire me to give this class. Therefore, I'm not paid by the Kapler Institute. I'm an independent Christian scientist who has just given my okay to help Max Kapler out with his teachings. The Kapler Institute is called the Kapler Institute because it really is something that Max Kapler incorporated in 1973 out of a need not to get members or not out of a need to build up another organization beyond the church organization, but as a need to have people help him get out his work to a larger audience. You know how it is when he lives in Switzerland. And we're in America, and there are classes he gives in England, and he has students in Australia, New Zealand, that besides just Switzerland, that he could not be in all these areas at the same time, so he needed help in order to help get out his work to the fields in these different areas around the world, so to speak. So, therefore, he incorporated. And it still is more or less Max's institute. It's his work that we have agreed to help him with. So therefore, as I say, he does not pay us. The institute is not an institute that hires people. Most of the work is done through volunteer help. There isn't a large hiring of people in order to do the work. In fact, most people are doing it just for the love of the idea. Just a very few people are salaried as a tape agent is in probably the information center, and that's all. So therefore, that means that my presenting of this class is free. I have nobody telling me what to do. Max doesn't know what I'm saying this week. He doesn't check over the notes. Sue doesn't look into what I do. I have no idea what she's doing this week. We're free to be really servants of the Spirit, servants of principle. And therefore, feel very strongly about this, that this is not something to join. Yes, there's memberships to the Institute only because it was required in the incorporation of the Kapler Institute that it be a membership corporation, but that is not something that's mandatory, but that can have members, but we certainly don't encourage that. It is such that we want it to be that the Institute itself is only basically an organization then that helps print Kapler's books and distribute his books and distribute his tapes. The Institute also is there only to subsidize the summer school, subsidize introductory conferences, subsidize classes. But it therefore, we keep it as free from us as possible because we feel then that we are servants of principle God. We know that man is principle's idea. And we know that our biggest responsibility is to identify ourselves with that principle and to stay identified with that principle and never take anything else besides the principle which is God as our only authority, as our only teacher, as our only practitioner, as our only government, as the only giver of our life experience. Because we are inseparably united to that principle as principle's idea, Therefore, principle alone can be our only government, can't it? You can just see that happening in the world today with the breakdown of governments, especially that are autocratic or dictators. One can just see in the world today that principle is saying that I am the only government of man. I am the only organization to which man belongs. I am the only teacher. I am the only authority. I am the only giver of your life experience. And you know, that therefore acts as a law of annihilation against all belief of personalities governing, or a false sense of government anywhere in the world. False sense not only of government, false sense of teaching, where through any selfishness or sensuality or sin or any sense of trying to build oneself up as a charismatic leader or teacher, that is broken down because it isn't the personality that teaches. It's always, as Mrs. Eddy said, don't follow me unless I follow the principle. It's always that principle that we turn to. Now, you can and know, I'm sure yourself, many, many articles that are written today where people begin to see then that we are servants of the Spirit, servants of God, servants of an impersonal principle, and not prisoners of any organization. And the world begins to see not only in Christian Science, in church, the laws of limitations put on us through religious organizations, which then do dip into and look into the notes of a teacher or the notes of a lecturer. And one has to adhere to the party line. And if one doesn't adhere to the party line right or wrong, then one is usually excommunicated. So we see that they see that in politics, that it isn't right anymore, my party, right or wrong. We see, therefore, if in the United States one perhaps is a Democrat, yet can still hopefully vote Republican here and there, or a Republican hopefully is free enough to vote Democratic here and there, because one can't feel just the narrowness into saying, this is my party, now come hell or high water, I vote straight party line. Because they begin to see that that is giving in to perhaps not narrowing one's vision so much into a party that they feel that then corruption can set in, that regardless of what the party does, right or wrong, I go with it. My leaders are always right. Those are the head of the party, regardless are right. Then that tends to close one's eyes to what goes on. And they tend to see that that doesn't work in politics. It doesn't work in, certainly in a religion, to narrow it down to my religion, right or wrong. So there was a wonderful article written quite a while ago. John Dorley speaks about it and writes about it in his books. That was reproduced in Ideas of Today, a publication that came out of England, that Peggy Brook, John Dorley's secretary, was producing, and it was called The Servants of the Spirit. And it was written by a member of parliament, by W.J. Brown. And it's a terrific little article. Maybe sometime you can dip into the one I have. But Brown, just a member of parliament, wanting to make sure that he didn't become a prisoner of parliament in England. So he wanted to show there, and I just read the beginning, the first paragraph of what he says to the members of parliament. He says, there are many classifications into which men and women may be divided as upper, middle, or lower class, rich, well-to-do, and poor, religious or atheist, conservative, liberal, labor, Catholic, Protestant, master and man, and so forth. But as I think the only categorization which really matters is that which divides men as between the servants of the Spirit and the prisoners of the organization. That classification which cuts right across all the other classification is indeed the fundamental one. The idea, the inspiration, originates in the internal world, the world of the Spirit. But just as the human spirit may be brought forth so much the idea, which is incarnate in an organization, whether the organization be political, religious, or social, is immaterial to my present argument. The point is that the idea, having embodied itself in an organization, the organization then proceeds gradually to slay the idea which gave it birth. So he goes on to show that what divides man can be those who remain servants of the spirit, and yet those who become prisoners of the organization. And he says that the problem of an organization is that it can eventually kill the idea which gave birth to the organization. And he goes on to say that the reason is that the idea, an organization, political, religious, whatever, usually starts out okay, with great expectations, with high values, with high standards. But in wanting to bring in more members to that organization in order to reach a wider audience, he says they usually have to water down the idea to reach the wider audience, to make it attractive. It's that watered down idea then becomes the standard to attract. And then that idea becomes watered down because to reach a wider and wider audience, until finally, hardly the original idea is there any longer. The organization stands for the watered down version. And therefore, that's why he says that finally, he goes on to say that the organization becomes the exact opposite of what it started out to be, because the people became prisoners of an organization. And he says, all right, he has a tremendous feeling, just as Mrs. Eddy. All right, we need organizations, yes, but always be detached from them. Just as Mrs. Eddy showed, she started her organization of the church. She dissolved it completely, everything. She stopped the college. She stopped the church. She wanted it to become a universal science. And she went up to, where did she go up? North there, in New Hampshire, from Boston, Concord, and to live and to write and to revise her textbook. But her field demanded that she go on with the organization. So she more or less said, no, I don't want to. God said I should disorganize. But she then said, all right, suffer it to be so. But she said, all right, I'll allow you to reorganize. She says, but always leave it open to disorganize. Always leave that possibility open. And this is exactly what Brown is saying. He says to the member of parliament, all right, we have to have this organization, but always be such that if it becomes the opposite of what it started out to be, always have that ability to disorganize. He says, because people are going to take the watered-down version, and then they're going to stay in the organization just for camaraderie, for friendship. They don't want to leave because they've built up friends all these years, and therefore that's another attraction to the organization. It becomes just a party, a social gathering. So he goes on here to show that, how does he say this? He wants to say that sense of always keeping it in flux, never always feeling detached from it. He actually uses the words in the article, always feel that you're outside of it, you're in it but not of it, more or less what Jesus said. I'm in the world, but I'm not of it. He walked over, Mrs. Eddy said, not in it and with it, but over mortal consciousness. And so he ends this article by saying, we must be servants of the spirit, not prisoners of the organization. We must keep in touch with the source of life, not lose ourselves in the temporary vehicles. And whenever the demands of the spirit, the categorical imperatives of the soul, conflict with the demands of the organization, it is the first to which we must listen. He says, but all this was said long ago. It is all contained in one of the legendary sayings of Jesus, which bears all marks of authenticity. The quote is, "The world is a bridge, ye shall pass over it, but ye shall build no houses upon it." And these, he says, bivouacs, yes, tents, maybe, houses, no. Meaning, let's build a tent because we're in this transitional stage. And as we go on and talk about that second degree of that Mrs. Eddy gives us there on the Christ translation and retranslation from the first degree of the physical to the second degree of the moral, the human, into the third degree of the divine, that second degree of the human is a transitional stage. And therefore, this is attributed to Jesus. The world is a bridge. See, it's transitional, that human stage. Ye shall pass over it. And so it says, and ye shall build no houses. Don't make that transitional stage of the human permanent. Meaning, it's a flux state. We're moving from misunderstanding, the first degree, into the third degree of the spiritual of understanding, where we are the Son of God, where we really come forth as principles, idea, in consciousness and experience. So that second degree of the human, and we're going to talk about this a lot, and of course the sixth chapter of Science, Theology, and Medicine is all on, we know in the textbook, this Christ is a Christ, the translation and retranslation, how the Christ itself, not that we take ourselves from the first degree of the physical, which is, Mrs. Eddy says, is depravity or false beliefs or the laws of limitation, feeling that we are a limited, sinful mortal. And it's not through our moral effort that we go into the spiritual realm and find ourselves as the Son of God. Not even through our intellectual effort lets us be the Son of God. But it's the Christ. It's just God happening to us. Thank goodness, because most of us would stop at that second degree of the human and build the houses and feel it's permanent. Because the teachings of Christian Science wants to say that the human can be good and evil. See, the human is a transitional stage. Sometimes it's influenced by false beliefs or evil, and sometimes the human is influenced by good. That characterizes the human. It's not quite the whole man. It's really more or less a half man, that human standpoint. We know ourselves. We experience what we like and we experience what we don't like. We want what we like. We don't like what we do, what these negative experiences we get. Well, as we move more and more, as the Christ idea takes us out of the physical, out of those false beliefs, which gives us the what we call evil experiences, in the human, the false beliefs begin to disappear and fall away. And as the Christ idea moves us more towards the spiritual realm, where we really are the Son of God, which is really the realm of good, constant good made known to consciousness. And that is when we just entertain ideas and our consciousness only aware of spiritual facts. The spiritual is really natural, as we'll see. It's just a consciousness full of facts, truth. And as Jesus said, the truth shall make us free. So therefore, the human standpoint, which is a split standpoint, which is made up of good and evil, disappears, and we only become the Son of God, which is only dealing with facts. So we can't build on that good and evil standpoint, thank goodness. We are being taken beyond just that level into the divine. So that's why it says don't build these tents on that transitional stage, and certainly don't get locked into any organization that is has gone into its opposite. So therefore, this is the attitude that we have with the Kapler Institute. I don't feel that I belong to any organization. There's nobody dictating to what I do. Every day I wake up and just know that I am a principle's idea, and that my only government and authority is principle, and that I'm free of organization. I will help with an organization as long as I feel that it is maintaining the high standard of principle, but I would be free and leave it at any time if I ever felt it wasn't maintaining that high standard of God. So that's how we feel about the Kapler Institute. It is just at the moment serving the idea, I feel, in the highest possible way today. And so therefore I am willing to represent it at a summer school. Now, the purpose always then of such a work, and again, as I'm just going on with the platform, it's not that first that we're independent of any church organization, any organization at all, so you don't have to join anything. But our purpose of coming together then is not to come to the Kapler Institute as an alternative to church, but our purpose is just to find out what is reality. We want to know what is the structure of reality, what is the structure of God, and how do I become one with that reality? That's the big burning issue that has been asked throughout, as we know, since thinking man, certainly since the Greeks, the philosophers have always wanted to know what is reality, what is the principle, and how do I become one with it? Those two big points. And I'm going to come back to this in a moment. We take then this week only the Bible and Science and Health as our only authority. And we take them because we feel they're revealed texts, that they were written with the divine mind, with the highest state of consciousness wrote the Bible, mind, and therefore both the Bible and the textbook we feel were written through inspiration, not the human mind, but that the biblical writers were open to a higher source of inspiration. And Mrs. Eddy certainly said she was open to the divine mind, not the human mind. She certainly makes it very clear that the human mind calculations didn't write the textbook. And when we begin to see the structure of the Bible in the textbook, they give such a beautiful structure, we figure, how could she just sit there and calculate it? She had to write it through inspiration. Our methods of investigating the Bible and the textbook, then, are not literally, but symbolically. We look for the symbols behind the Bible, how the Bible talks to us symbolically. So we look for the ideas behind the symbols. And we don't interpret the textbooks atomistically, but structurally. We look for the Bible and the textbook as a story in its whole structure. What does the Bible tell us from Genesis to Revelation? What does Science and Health tell us from chapter 1 to chapter 16. We look at it as a structure. We don't study here a book out of the Bible like Revelation and then here Genesis or here another book out of the Bible atomistically, or we don't study the 16th chapter and then the 8th chapter or there maybe the first chapter. We study the Bible from Genesis to Revelation in its structure. And we study the textbook from the first chapter to the 16th in its structure. We feel then that both those books contain the full statement of Christian Science. We aren't trying to add something to them. It's just the method of text interpretation. Taking those books as they are and going in and seeing them holistically and structurally, we feel brings out the true meaning of the textbooks rather than studying them atomistically. So therefore we see in that we owe everything then of course to Mrs. Eddy, who discovered Christian Science and founded it, but to John Dorley, for those of us who are new, he being a prominent Christian Science practitioner, teacher, lecturer, writer in London, in the United States, around the world. But Dorley, mainly stopping his big practice that he had and spending time saying, I want to know the science behind Christian Science. We call it a science, but we aren't teaching it as a science. I'm out teaching it as a religion. So what is it as a science? So he, through his deep work, really gave us the structural method of scientific text interpretation. And then Max Kapler, you know, was his student. Max took class from John Dorley while John Dorley was still in the Christian Science Church. He joined John Dorley's study group, in the late 30s when Dorley wanted to investigate the science of Christian Science. And Kapler wrote his first book in 1946 called Christian Government while he was still in the church. And then went on to publish in 1954 his book on the structure of the textbook, Our Way of Life, where he went on to give the structured scientific interpretation of the textbook and then later on the Bible. But we know now that both Dorley and Kapler were excommunicated. The church puts out information and says that Dorley left. I've read where they say, well, John Dorley left the church or Kapler left the church. They didn't. They were booted out. Neither one of them wanted to leave the church. They wanted to stay in. They were longtime Christian Scientists and loved Christian Sciences. Kapler's mother was a Christian Science practitioner who started many churches in Switzerland and I think perhaps a few in Germany also. He did not want to be booted out of the church. But we have then Dorley's, I'm not sure if we have it here, but on the free literature table, his statement where he gives all the communication between Boston and Dorley concerning the excommunication and the church saying what he was doing was a personal teaching of Christian Science. And Dorley wanted to say, no, it isn't. I'm just teaching the science. It's impersonal. I'm working with scientific criteria. But they booted him out, and to this day, the church continues to teach it as a religion, atomistically, and we have just gone on with the science of it. So that gives the platform, it's a strong platform, I feel, to the class this week, and it's one that certainly I love, and I'm sure we all love. Now, when we come to that point where it says, that big question that we are always asking ourselves, what is reality? That's the big, big issue. And then the next question, how do I become one with that reality?